Welcome back, everyone, to Finding the Middle Path, Be Drama-Free Through DBT. I'm Lucinda. I'm your guide on this journey. Today, we're going to talk about a new module, Emotion Regulation, and the skill for discussion is going to be Emotion Identification and Description. Let's jump right in, shall we? Okay, let's talk a little bit about why emotion regulation is important. It's pretty easy to explain. Emotionally dysregulated people often have very intense emotions, and difficulty controlling these intense emotions can lead to impulsive and problematic behaviors. Problematic behaviors are often used as solutions to intensely painful emotions. So some examples of that might be using drugs, fighting, or yelling, just to name a few. Our goals for emotion regulation training are, number one, to understand the emotions that you experience by understanding the pieces and how they're connected so that you know where you can intervene and where you can exert influence over those emotions. Another goal is to reduce emotional vulnerability, which pretty much means that you put yourself in an emotional place where you can respond effectively to things that happen rather than react impulsively. You also get to decrease the frequency of your unwanted emotions, so things that are uncomfortable, and decrease emotional suffering, which is pretty much by being mindful of your emotions and understanding where they are, what they mean, and how they might help you, you actually make it so that you suffer less from those emotions. A question you might be asking yourself now is, why regulate emotions instead of just do away with emotions? I mean, I can't be the only person that thinks it might be nice if I never feel sad again. Well, emotions do important things for us, one of which is that emotions can give us information, so they can signal that something is wrong or something is off. The problem then comes when emotions are treated as facts about the world as opposed to interpretations. So when you have an emotion that's giving you information about a situation, it's really important to check the facts of the situation to see if they align with what your emotions are telling you. So as an example, I used to ride the bus to work every once in a while when I was working swing shift. So we'd work at 2:30. I would get to the bus stop around 2:15. It was like a 10-minute walk from the bus stop to work. One day I got off the bus and I was walking to work and I noticed that there was a guy following me, and he was just a dude with tattoos, and we were going the same spot. And after a minute or two of him following me, I started to get nervous. I started getting adrenaline pumping a little, and I started to get kind of scared. Then I stopped to check the facts of the situation. I didn't know that was what I was doing at the time, but later realized that's what I was doing. So I looked around myself and I noticed, okay, it's the middle of the day. It's light outside. There are kids playing. If I needed to go find someone to help me, I probably could find someone to help me. I'm almost to work. And I look back at the guy and he's not really looking at me. He's like looking at his phone, kind of looking around. Like, he doesn't actually look menacing. So by doing that, I calmed myself down a little bit, and sure enough, after a few minutes, he turned and went to a house, so he was just a guy on his way home, and I incorrectly had an emotion about what that meant, because he was, in quotes, following me. So checking the facts of the situation can calm you down when your emotions are telling you something. It may not necessarily be true. Another benefit to emotions is that emotions communicate to and influence others. We're all interconnected, whether we want to be or not, whether we try to be or not. Our emotions, expressed by our words, face, or body language, are going to influence the people around us. The easiest way to see this is to have an interaction with a baby. If you look at a baby, it doesn't matter what you're saying to the baby. You could be looking at the baby and smiling and saying, "Oh, you cute little thing. You keep me up all night, you little poop machine." And as long as you have that like high-pitched happy voice and you're smiling, the baby is going to smile too. The reason they do that is because of mirror neurons. So they have neurons in their brain that are going to mirror what they see going on around them. And that helps them develop language. It helps them learn how to develop emotions. And it helps them just get a grasp of what's going on in the world. And we all have those things. And even if we learn to tamper them down a little bit as we grow old, we still have those in act we still have those active mirror neurons in our brains that will allow us to feel how other people are feeling. So we can actually feel the emotions of the people around us. Whether or not we know that we're doing it, we can do that. The third benefit to emotions are that emotions can motivate and prepare us for action. So strong emotions can get us to do things that we may not otherwise have been motivated to do. Additionally, sometimes we have action urges that are hardwired to emotions. So if I hear a horn beeping at me when I'm walking across the street, I will have the instinct or the action urge to jump out of the way. Like, I don't have to sit and think, there is a horn beeping at me. What should I do, right? My brain just knows, if there's a horn beeping, look around, get out of the way. So those are the three things that can help us with emotions. That emotions give us information, they communicate to and influence others, and they can motivate and prepare us for actions. Very important for that we keep them and learn how to regulate them instead of just doing away with them entirely. Now that we've talked a little bit about emotions and why they're important and how they can help us, let's talk a little bit about our first skill, which is emotion identification and description. During this time, we're going to talk about how to observe your emotion and how to describe your experience. Yeah, the first thing about emotions is that they're very complex. They have lots of different pieces. So the first piece is the vulnerability factors, and this is what happened before the event to make you a little more sensitive to whatever it is that happens. Connected to that is the prompting event, which is the trigger of the start of the emotion. From there, you can either move down to thoughts about the event, which you'll have sometimes, but oftentimes you just skip right into what I call the experience of having the emotion. So that is made up of external reactions and internal reactions. External reactions are things that other people can see. So that'll be face and body language, actions, the things that you do, or words, the things that you say. The internal reactions are things that only you can see. So it'll be changes that you can sense in your body that other people will not be able to see, or action urges. So things that you might want to do but don't necessarily act on. Connected to the experience of the emotion are the after effects. So that'll be behaviors that you engage in after the initial experience of the emotion, or thoughts that you have, or secondary emotions that may trigger as a response to the emotional experience you're having. Connected to that are secondary prompting events. So other things that may happen that trigger more of the emotion happening or increase the intensity. All of that falls under an emotion name and a specific intensity, which will change depending on your experience with emotions. The other part to note about the emotions is that all of these pieces are interconnected. So you know how your emotions influence other people? Well, each piece of your emotion has an influence on the other pieces that it's connected to. You could think of it as sort of like a circuit board. If you break a piece of the circuit, the board is no longer functional, right? If you influence a piece of the emotion, then the rest of it will change along with it. So as an example, if you have vulnerability factors and you use skills to deal with them, the experience of your emotion is going to change. Either the emotion will not fire at all, or the emotion will decrease in intensity. The easiest way to understand the model of emotions is to have an example. So I'm going to tell you a little story about teenage Lucinda playing basketball. When I was a freshman, I played for my school team, and we were pretty good. There was one particular game when we were behind by quite a bit. So that was my vulnerability factor, is that we were behind in the game, and we hadn't lost very many games. So we're playing the game. I steal the ball and I head down court on a fast break. All by myself, I go up for the layup and I freaking miss. If you've played basketball, you know that you don't miss layups. You practice those suckers all the time. More than anything else, you're practicing layups. And if you miss a layup, you feel super embarrassed. So, prompting event, I missed a layup all by myself. No one even trying to block me. My thoughts, I'll clean it up a bit for you, but I was thinking, how the heck did that happen? I can't believe I missed a layup. What the heck, how did that happen? All of those things, with lots of other words sprinkled in there that I will not say on the podcast. For the internal part of my experience, my heart started racing, I got a lump in my throat. My action urges were I wanted to throw the ball against the wall, I wanted to hit the wall, I wanted to yell, I wanted to stomp my feet. For someone observing me, the external experience of my emotion, you would have seen my face getting red, I looked super pissed, and I was stomping around. So I guess I did act on that other one, on the stomping part. A few minutes later, my coach called a timeout. So I walked over to the bench, which was actually a line of chairs together, and I engaged in the action of flipping the chair over that I was supposed to sit in. Right after I flipped it over, I realized, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to sit on that stupid chair. What am I supposed to do now? I didn't want to look like a fool and go grab the chair and set it back up. So I just sat on the ground and stewed while my coach talked about how we could work on catching up on the game. So the after effects of my actions and the things that I was feeling were that I felt even more embarrassed because I flipped a stupid chair over and then here I am looking stupid sitting on the ground. I was also mad at myself still for missing the layup and upset with myself for looking ridiculous by having to sit on the ground. Halftime came along and I was still kind of mad. I was still pissed at myself. I was still dwelling, and a friend of mine on the team was like, trying to comfort me, so she was kind of like trying to pat me on the back, and I pushed her hand away, which then I led to more thoughts. Oh my god, you're being such a jerk. Why are you doing this? Chill out. But that didn't work. I didn't actually chill out. So the experience of the emotion intensified. And that is usually the story that I will tell them. Either that or a story about my time working at Taco Bell to show how the model of emotions works in real life and how all the pieces are connected to one another. So now that you understand the model of emotions, there are a few ways that you can apply this to your employment. The first is identifying your pre-existing vulnerability factors and coping ahead of time with them. So exercising, taking time away from work, debriefing with your colleagues. One of the most important ones, I think, is creating a support system with the people that you work with. You spend 40 hours with them. You might as well know that you can count on them and depend on them, and then they can also count on and depend on you. The other one is to use your body to communicate with your mind, specifically external influencing the internal. Deep breathing, as the kids say, is bae. By using deep breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, you can actually convince your body to calm down and to stay in a calm mind state. The other thing you can do is things like progressive muscle relaxation to use your body to communicate to your mind. Anytime that you're in an emotional experience, being able to calm yourself using little tips and tricks can help you to influence that emotion and keep it at a manageable level. The other part, keeping your urges, is just that, urges. We all have urges to do things that probably are not good ideas, and being able to influence your emotional experience means that you are more capable of managing your urges and keeping them as just urges. Don't snap at that kid. Don't make that sarcastic remark. That's one I have to remind myself a lot. Take a breath and then just let it go. The last one is managing after effects when an emotion sneaks up on you. So if something happens and you get right into that emotional experience, understanding that it may affect you past or may affect you beyond just the few moments that you might be feeling that experience is important. So you know that the things that happen afterwards are going to be affected by it. The thoughts that you have afterwards will be affected by that emotional experience, and you can use coping skills in order to deal with that. For teens with the model of emotions, probably the most important thing to know is that they move through those pieces quick like bunnies. They're going to need a lot of guidance to identify the places to intervene, and they're probably going to need some time to de-escalate before they're able to investigate that emotional experience that they are having. Practice and repetition, they're going to reinforce where you can intervene in an emotional experience, but they're definitely going to need help identifying where the pieces are. because they move so quickly, everything is going to seem like a blur. So a lot of questions and a lot of guidance is going to help them to figure out how exactly to get in there and influence the emotions. The other part to remember is that prefrontal cortex development is going to strike again here. They're going to have difficulty seeing how the pieces are connected, engaging the consequences of their actions taken. And more often than not, their impulsive urges are going to be acted on rather than just remaining as urges. So those are just things to remember, is that the model is going to take a while for them to understand. And that's totally okay. Do it over and over and over. All right, that's going to conclude our walk for today. All of the DBT information that I shared with you today was taken from the DBT Skills Manual for Adolescents by Jill Rathis and Alec Miller. The mirror neuron information I got from a blog article from Psychology Today called "I Feel Your Pain, But Why?" If you're watching the YouTube version, there is a link on the screen that you can follow. Thank you so much for listening, for taking 15 to 20 minutes of your time to learn about emotions and learn about DBT. I'll see you next time, where we find the middle path and be drama-free through DBT.